It's time for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're the only show on the airwaves dedicated to growing roses. We're glad you've joined us today. Our phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you during today's show. The number to call is 347-677-1870. Or send us a tweet using the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Join us as we explore the world of roses.
Well, welcome to another edition of Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're glad you've joined us today. And we've got some big news for Rose Chat Radio fans. We're going to be going prime time this August. That's right. Our live broadcast will be moving to Wednesday nights. We'll be broadcasting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific. Now, our time may be changing, but we'll still have the same awesome guests and information, plus the latest news from the world of roses. And we truly appreciate your continuing support. And we've had a big week here at Rose Chat Radio with two exciting broadcasts. If you missed our interview last night, or Thursday night, with Lisa and Nancy from Big Blend Radio on their Spirit of America tour, they visited the world's largest rose in Tombstone, Arizona, and I want to encourage you to go back and listen to that podcast. It was great fun to be able to talk to those ladies, and we heard an incredible interview with Miss Dorothy DeVere, who is the caretaker of this huge rose. Check it out in our archive on blogtalkradio.com/rosechat or via iTunes in the podcast section. In just a few minutes, we've got our good friend Jacques Ferrard to talk about trends in rose gardening and about an awesome line of roses called Drift Roses. You got to stay tuned for that. We've also got a great giveaway this week for Rose Chat Radio fans on Facebook. Teresa, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Hey, yeah, good morning. That's right, Chris. We're giving away an awesome prize pack today. A beautiful eco-friendly tote from Star Roses and Plants, along with a Rose Chat Radio coffee mug. And wait, that's not all. We're also throwing in a 3-pack of Annie Haven's all-natural soil conditioning manure teas. All you have to do to win is like us on Facebook, then post on the page that you listen to today's show. So good luck.
Wow. Now, with so much going on, many people have very little time to spend in their gardens, but want to experience the beauty and the allure of the rose in their own landscape. You know, Star Roses and Plants has been working with hybridizers literally for generations to achieve that balance of beauty, form, and color in the garden without all the fuss of spraying for disease and pests. Our guest today is Jacques Ferrard, and he's the Vice President of Product Development for Star Roses and Plants, and he's joining us today to talk about new trends in rose gardening and also about a wonderful collection of roses called the Drift Series. Good morning, Jacques. Welcome to Rose Chat.
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Teresa. Thank you for having me on the show again. It's always a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, we're so glad to have you. It's been a couple months since we saw each other. We actually got to meet back in May, and you've been sort of a world traveler since then.
Well, that's part of what I do, Chris. I mean, I go our rose trials are. It's all over the country, you know, to make sure that, we introduce the right rose for the right region. We have trials all over the U.S., and part of what I do is to go and visit those tri gardens, so that takes a lot of time. Yeah. And the good news is that, there's a lot of exciting new things coming in the world of roses. I think, like you say, the hybridizers are responding to those, new trends that you and I talked about extensively last time we met, which is mostly, smaller gardens and, low-maintenance gardens. I mean, those are trends that has affected a lot, how people look at plants in general, not just roses. But, of course, with roses, we're right smack in the middle of the action.
That's absolutely right. Now we actually met back in May over at P. Allen Smith's at the Moss Mountain Farm, and I'll tell you, that's a spectacular place to be. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, yes. I mean, it was very impressive, and it's interesting because it's fairly remote and it's also fairly new. And when you get there, you get the feeling that you get in an old plantation that was there for a couple of centuries.
Oh, definitely. And the way that he has designed the landscape there and the various, what I call, and I think what he calls, garden rooms. As you walk throughout that property, it's just amazing.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's really a horticultural paradise. And if your listeners have the occasion to go and visit, it's really, really worth it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think I was just, to borrow a phrase from one of my previous guests, gobsmacked at the rose garden there. It was just incredible.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that Alan has been very good at, big proponent of, no first, low maintenance roses, and it shows in his own design and landscape. And we were very happy to see, of course, that there was quite a few of our own varieties, our own introductions there, besides Knockout, which is obviously the dominant rose in the landscape there. But we also see quite a few hybrid teas and other landscape shrubs, including the drift that we're going to talk about in a little while.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I had heard people sing the praises of Milwaukee Calatrava,
mm-hmm.
and had heard about their beauty and their fragrance, and I laid eyes on them for the very first time in that rose garden. And I'll tell you, it's a breathtaking effect, the way the garden's laid out in the round, and you just see the swath of white. And then, you know, as soon as you enter that garden, you can smell them. It's incredible rose.
Yes, I mean, it's been one of the most difficult parts for the breeders. I've been reconcile fragrance with toughness. And Milwaukee Calatrava, which is a Bill Radler introduction, you know, William has been the breeder of Knockout Rose. And Milwaukee Calatrava is also one of his children. And what we really like about that rose, it is almost as tough as Knockout, but also extremely fragrant. And it's really our first shrub rose with all the characteristic that we're looking for that is very fragrant. And also because it's white, it does really well in the south because you guys don't have too much snow, right, Chris? Not very often you see snow, so white is a very popular color.
Right, it is. And, you know, I think people sometimes discount white, but white is a show-stopping color in
yeah.
the garden.
However, for Teresa, I can see, and we see that actually, it's reflecting in the sales of our roses, that white, for some reason, is not so popular in Chicago or the places where they see a lot of snow in the wintertime. And I guess it's probably a little sick of the white by the time spring comes.
Yeah.
That could be true. That could be true. I had never thought of it before, but that really could be true because we are ready to see color when spring comes.
Mm-hmm.
So what else are we seeing in terms of trends with rose gardeners and with, you know, just gardeners in general? As far as I know, you know, Star Roses and Plants has, you know, a huge collection of roses, but they also do lots of other plants too. So could you speak just a little bit about overall trends in gardening?
Well, I think people are looking for continuous color and things that give them an occasion to enjoy what's happening without doing too much about it. So we really see trends in, especially in perennials. We are actually very much involved in hybridizing perennials these days. And first thing we look is at they have to be repeat blooming. So we're looking mostly at the species that will bring that characteristics. And also because low maintenance also means it's what it means. People don't want to have to do anything, including watering, and that's a little too much sometimes because, you know, plants need water. However, we see, especially in places that have been, affected by the drought over the last few years, such as, the Rocky Mountains and part of California and the West, for drought-tolerance plants. We are not there with roses, although, Rosa Banksia, which is the rose that is the biggest rose in the world in Tombstone, like you mentioned earlier, live and thrive in that, pretty much desert type of environment. But they still need water. But we're looking at varieties more and more that can withstand a little bit less water than, the classic hybrid teas budded on Dr. Huey.
Right. And it, speaking of root stocks, you know, Dr. Healy's a very popular root stock here in the Deep South. But, you know, a little bit further down in Florida, they're using other root stocks because of the nematode problem.
Yes, I mean, you get actually in Florida, you have, and on the Gulf Coast, you have two areas. You get south of Orlando and a really narrow bend along the Gulf where the soil is very sandy and there's a lot of nematodes, and the folks in that area have been using Rosa fortuniana as the understock, yes. What our approach at Star Roses and Plants has been mostly to ignore understock and try to develop varieties that will flourish on their own roots.
So how important is that? To get that on root or rose experience, you know, I think a lot of people think, well, you get such a smaller plant, but you know, sometimes I think they don't realize that it catches up very quickly.
Again, it's going to be depending on the variety, Chris, but usually this is the case. We have been selecting our new introduction for the last 10, 12 years exclusively on their own root, so we know when they're, you know, when we bring them to the market, to the retailers, that they will perform well on their own root. However, each variety can be considered, you know, as a different rootstock, so you're not going to have the same reaction. And we know for a fact that some of the real staple of the industry, the varieties like Peace and Mr. Lincoln, are not doing so well on their own root compared to some more modern hybrids.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So it seems like that the real big trend in roses is to go to on-root varieties.
For a lot of reasons, you know, when you live, you know, where Teresa is in Chicago, in the wintertime, if you get a very harsh early winter and the top part of the rose get killed, you know, you have the plant coming back from the Dr. Huey, and all of a sudden it's no longer the yellow hybrid tea that you bought the previous year, but this climbing red rose that only blooms once. And we had so many of those phone calls at Star Roses, you know, over the years. See, what happened to my rose? What happened is that, unfortunately, when the weather got really cold, the variety that was grafted died, and what came back was the understock.
Yeah, that happens. We see that a lot in our local rose society. People call and say, "Help, my rose changed color."
yes. Well, so I mean, there's value to grafted roses. I just would say that for us, again, for the last at least ten years, we have tried to develop you know, all of our roses on their own root.
Yeah, that's awesome. Before we start talk about drift roses, you had an interesting story about the knockout rose when we met in May, and I was wondering if you could share some of that, I guess some of the folklore of the knockout rose with us today on the show.
What did they say?
Well,
I will take the Fifth Amendment right here.
Well, just how that rose came to into being, into market with Mr. Radler's breeding program. And,
yes, oh, and, that's a good story. You know, when Bill Radler sent us the seedling of Knockout, he was, you know, first of all, audience might be interested to know that at the time he was germinating all his rose seeds in his basement under artificial light because he lives in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is not a great area to do a lot of outdoor breeding. And so he sent us one little plant that he propagated out of that original seedling, and that was that plant was really tiny and weak, and we say, okay, we're going to take it, but it took us a while to nurture that plant back to something viable. So that was very interesting because when we got it, I think it was in 1992, I wrote in our acquisition book, which is where we record all the rose coming from all the breeders that we work with, you know, I give it the CP number. That's the code we use internally, and under the column quality, I put poor. So here we got, we had this runt of a seedling that became the most popular rose, you know, today. So that's kind of the story behind it. I mean, one of the stories.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's probably the most widely grown rose today.
In the U.S., that's probably true, Chris.
Yeah. I mean, I can't drive around my neighborhood or even in the city of Birmingham without, you know, I could probably count hundreds of knockout roses in bloom.
It's the first, you know, rose or even plant that deliver on the promises to be always in bloom with very low maintenance all over the U.S., especially in the South, where, as you know, black spot is prevalent.
Oh, yeah. It is a huge problem in my neck of the woods, for sure. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Teresa is going to join us, and she'll be talking with Jacques about this Drift series of roses. I can't wait to hear more about them. Don't go away. There's more Rose Chat Radio coming your way.
Hi, this is Jackie D'Elia with Southern Post Journal, and today I want to talk to you about manure compost tea. This is Authentic Haven brand from California. One of the things that I really like about this is how easy it is to apply. It's a simple cotton bag filled with composted manure. You drop it in your bucket, typically a 1 to 5 gallon bucket of water. Drop in your tea bag. You'll notice some of the brown liquids coming out, and that's the manure starting to mix with the water. Once that's finished, 1 to 3 days, you'll have some fantastic manure tea ready for putting on your plants. So I've got my manure tea brewing for about 3 days, and I'm going to take a peek in there and see what it looks like. It's got a great color, it's got a great smell, and it's ready to be applied to my garden. So whether you choose to put it in your watering can and a sprayer, or just take a bucket and drench it into your vegetable garden, it's very easy to use. I use it in my garden, and I highly recommend it. So give it a try.
Find Haven Brand Soil Conditioners online at manuretea.com.
Hey, Jacques, let's talk about the drift roses. When we were together at P. Allen's Mountain Retreat, you shared the history of the drift roses. Could you share that history with our listeners today?
Yes, and it also goes back to 1992. It must have been a really big year for us in retrospect. You know, that was more than 20 years ago where I was chatting with my good friend Jacques Mouchot, which just retired as a head breeder at the House of Mayon in France. And we were talking about, you know, at the time, the Maidenland roses were pretty popular. Those were very large landscape roses. And we were talking about, it wouldn't be nice to have the same type of plants that do really well in the landscape, but, you know, on the size of... But half or even, you know, smaller than half the size of those Maidenland, with some of them, you know, grew up to be like 6 or 7 feet wide. So that kind of was the idea. And so we started to work on it. He started to work on it. And over the years, sent us a bunch of varieties that, for lack of a better word, were a cross between those large landscape roses and miniature roses. And it took us a lot of time and trial and error to come up with, you know, the prototype of what we thought we would like. And that was a variety that we called the White Drift that actually did not have a very long or successful commercial experience. But it was, in terms of the plant habit and, you know, how it... how it grew, how it performed, the disease resistance, what we're looking for. Unfortunately, it wasn't blooming enough because, as you know, consumers are rightfully are picky and they want more color all the time. And that rose wasn't blooming enough. So we went back to the drawing board and looked at a lot of other seedlings over the years until it was 204 when we find that we had... came up with about 5 seedlings that had those characteristics and that became the base of the drift roses, which we introduced in 2007. And that gives you the time it took to develop, you know, from the concept to the program, you know, was 17 years. And the actually, I didn't calculate right, because if you go from 92 to 2004, it's a little more than that. But it's not like a car where now you get the engineers, you know, coming from the concept and going to the production line in 3 years. For roses, it takes a lot longer than that.
I think that's one of the things that surprises a lot of people is just how long it takes to get a rose to market, the time and investment that you have in that. A little bit ago, you mentioned that you'd been traveling to test sites. Could you talk to us a little bit about what happens to the roses before they get to us?
Yeah, we do you know, receive them from the breeder, and we work with a lot of hybridizers. The two main one being you know, the House of Mayon, which we have worked, you know, for close to 100 years now, and with the William Radler, which we've been working with since the 1990s. But we also work with a series of amateur breeders that are sending us their seedlings, and you know, once in a while, one of them gets lucky, and we have room to introduce one of their varieties. And so it's always interesting to look at what they're coming up with, because they do not have the pressure of the commercial side, and therefore we see a lot of very interesting, funky things. And one of the last things like that was those Iconics from Jim Sproul out of Bakersfield, which brought us to the Rosa Ultimia. We can talk about that in another chat, a radio chat, if you're interested.
Oh, that sounds really great.
And so when they get to us, we propagate them, and we look at them at three main test sites that we own that are inside the company. One in West Grove, California, which we call Rose Hell, because it's a perfect place for all the nasty diseases of the East Coast. And one in Watsonville, California, near where I live, which we call Rose Hell 2, because it has all the nasty diseases of the West Coast. And the third one being in Wasco in California, in our rose fields, where we test them for the ability to grow in commercial practice. And when we're satisfied that the seedlings, you know, satisfied all those three criteria, and it takes usually about 3 to 5 years from the moment we get them from the breeder. Then they go to about 15 different test sites all over the U.S. from Georgia and Florida to Boston, from Chicago down to Texas and on the West Coast.
Well, I'm personally very glad, and I'm sure most gardeners are very glad, that before the roses get to us, you have already put them through rose hell so that we don't have to go through that when they get to us.
Yeah, my personal motto is I want to make sure I kill them before you have a chance to do that, Teresa.
Yeah, we want to keep the reputation of the rose at a very high level. We don't want to have a rose hell experience in our backyard. Do you do regional testing?
Yes, that's what I meant with those. We do the regional testing after the rose hell. And this is because we know that most plants are, you know, are going to perform really well in a geographical area and not in another. And it is very rare when you can find a variety that can do well from Southern California to Maine and from Seattle to Orlando. And I would have to say that what we're very happy with the drift roses is that they're one of those rare kind that really do well all over the country. Mm-hmm. And we didn't expect that when we started, but all the tests that we got from all the garden came up positive, and all the feedback we got on drift, again, whether it's you know, from Central California to Orlando to Philadelphia to you know, Chicago, all the feedback that we have got on the drift have been very, very positive, and we're excited by that.
I started planting them about 3 years ago in my Zone 5B garden, mm-hmm. and they beautifully. They do very, very well here. I've got several of them. I'm trying to get one of every, at least one of every, multiples. They really do have very little bloom time. Could you walk us through your suggestions for steps for maintaining the drifts?
The main thing to do is probably once they're planted, you know, water them, feeding them a little bit, but no later, especially in the northern climate. You should not feed after the late July, early August. That's because, like with every plant, if you feed late in the season, they will have to tend to push too much new growth when it comes to the fall, and when the first killing force come, will do more damage. So that's something that we recommend, not just with the roses, but with all plants. And normally you don't have to deadhead them, but maybe on a variety like Peach Drift, it might help. And you just do it with a hedge clipper. You don't have to be picky about that. I mean, they're just like you should just go with a hedge clipper or, you know, something like that. If you want to, that will maybe accelerate a little bit the blooming cycle.
My husband will be happy to hear that. What about containers? Do these work well in containers?
They do well in containers. The number one thing to be careful with is, you know, coming back to watering. We find out that it's not true in the ground, but in containers, they would need a lot of water. And all roses do, but they probably need more water. In other words, when the weather is hot, probably need to water them really every day to get the result you want.
Could you give us sort of a wide array of the colors that they come in?
That's another very, you know, interesting thing. With Knockout, you know, we can give you all the colors you want as long as they're pink or red. We have not, unfortunately, been able to come up with, you know, other colors except for Sunny Knockout. With Drift, they come pretty much in all colors. We got red, we got pinks, we got white, and we're working on the yellow. We got the new one come Popcorn Drift, which start cream and end up white. It's really like a popcorn. And so we're working on a yellow and on a true apricot.
When we were at Moss Mountain, one of the roses that P. Allen had, one of the drift roses he had was the coral drift.
Mm-hmm.
So right then that I had to have it. And I looked around and I didn't find anyone that had it locally. So I got my local ICG guys to look for it. They found them. They had some in their shop. They went very quickly. I got in and got two of them, and they are beautiful. They're just a very beautiful color, really a showstopper.
Yeah. And the the interesting thing for you know about coral drift, especially from your southern and southwestern listeners, is that this we got to report that this is the variety that can take the heat, you know, the best in terms of the performance in really hot weather. We're talking, you know, upper 90s, low 100. And I was very surprised about that because our test, you know, did not. I mean, we all. It's interesting. We always learn something about off roses afterwards. I mean, it's the nature of the thing. As much as we test, there's always surprises at the end. Some are good, some are bad. But in the case of coral drift, that was the good news. I mean, I actually was talking yesterday to one of our growers that just had a very very large landscape contract with the Texas Department of Highway to plant some drift around San Antonio this fall. Coral drift. Yeah. So
I think they
believe in that. Means that they believe in its toughness, and we got more than several anecdotal evidence that it does really well when it's really hot.
Good news. One of my other favorites is the apricot. It has a double bloom.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. It looks great. I have a lot of old roses, so it looks great in my mixed border with that double bloom. Love that one.
Yes, it's, you know, it's kind of a trade-off all the time, Teresa. Double blooms sometimes do not clean very well, so for landscape plants, it can be an issue. Fortunately, in the case of apricot drift, it's got fully double bloom, but it cleans really well.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. It sure does. And I'm real interested in getting one of the popcorn drifts. I have not had that one, but I have a reputation for being the popcorn queen, so I'm definitely on the lookout for popcorn. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, popcorn drift is actually a mutation of peach drift. So for, you know, if you like peach drift, you're going to love popcorn drift. If you don't like peach drift, because it shows all the characteristics. It grows exactly. It's got the same nice glossy foliage, the same flower shape and so forth. Same disease resistance, same winter hardiness. Comes in the popcorn flavor. It doesn't just smell like it, though.
So we can bring a bouquet in when we're watching movies. That's great.
Yeah. Now, Jacques, if you can get a popcorn flavor added to that,
think it's impossible. It's interesting. You know, we could do a show on fragrance. I'm sure you have done it before. There's all sorts of fragrances in roses that people don't expect. I mean, you get fruit flavors, you get also really bad flavors, and you get, culinary flavors. I'm not sure if we can get the butter, but it would be worth a trial. But I would tell you, Chris, that it would not be a primary hybridizing objective here. It will come with the territory, but I don't think we commercially can look at that as a very major objective. Not today, anyway.
Yeah. Well, it'll definitely add interest to our garden tours for sure.
Well, you know, I mean, fragrance is very important, and there's a lot of botanic gardens that have a fragrance garden where you get and it's wonderful because it's just not attracts your eyes, but it caters to your other sense as well, and that's a wonderful experience.
No, it sure is. It sure is. Attaches to so many things, memories and everything else. Mm-hmm. Let's change it up just a little bit and move from drifts to talking to us a little bit about the Plant Watch program.
Oh, that's totally that is a totally different topic. Well, this is more, on the legal side of things. All the new introduction from star roses and plants or from the other rose hybridizer or, not just roses, but plants in general. You have a hybridizer that has spent years to develop those new plants, whether it's hydrangeas or azaleas or roses. And part of what we do is to make sure that the interests of the breeders are respected. And Plant Watch is an organization that we use along with other plant introducer to monitor and make sure that all the plants that are going to the market are being propagated legally by legitimate propagators and growers.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the bright green containers that that we see. So are you the only ones using those green containers for the roses?
We're going to use them more and more. That the Chartreuse container was the brainchild of our marketing director, Carl McKean, and it has been a resounding success. I have to say that there was a lot of skepticism to begin with from part of the, even internally a little bit at Star Roses and Plants, but mostly with the grower community, and I think we passed that, and people, know the green part and know what to look for when they see the green part. And so the green part is associated to the knockout rose, obviously, since that's what we started it with. But it's also, you will find your drift roses in the green part more and more of our other roses in the green part moving in the future.
It's easy for us as rosarians and members of local rose societies to point people to good roses. You say, just go to the home center and look for the bright green pot.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Jack, we have lots of listeners that are new to gardening and they're new to growing roses. So what advice would you have for someone who's new to growing roses?
I think just like with any plant, do not fear failure. It's probably not going to happen. Just, when you plant the plant, just follow the instructions of the tag, which pretty much tells you to, if you buy a container, to dig a hole that's about twice the size of the container. put some soil amendment if needed a little bit, but not always necessary, and water it thoroughly. Water is really the number one thing. More than fertilization, more than spraying, more than anything else. Plants need water.
None of us do very well without water, do we?
No, we don't. We're not built for that.
No, we just don't do well with that. Well, we feel that everyone would be happier with more roses in their life, and Drift Roses are surely going to make that happen. So thanks for all your hard work bringing Drift Roses to the home gardeners. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, Teresa and Chris. It's always fun. So, you know, I would love to come back and chat about different things. You know, you just let me know. It's always a pleasure, and I hope that your listener find it fun and informative.
Well, there's lots for us to talk about, and we will definitely be having you back.
As long as they understand my accent, I guess it's okay.
We love it.
Thanks so much. We appreciate your time today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much, guys, and talk to you next time. And for your listener, you know, I hope the weather is nice and you can go out and enjoy your garden and your roses in your garden.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Josh. Good day.
Thank you.
Bye. Now, you can find more information about the Drift series of roses at starroses.com and on Facebook at the Knockout Family of Roses. You can follow them on Twitter at Plant a Star. Their theory is if you can dig a hole, you can plant a star, and I could not agree more. Beautiful, beautiful series of roses. Wouldn't you agree, Teresa?
Oh, I absolutely love them. I mean, there's very little downtime. They just bloom, bloom, bloom. They're also great to use in a vase. They come in so many different colors. I have most of them, and they do very well for me.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when y'all are talking about growing roses in pots, especially the Drift varieties, I've got two plants of the Red Drift growing in a big white concrete pot on my side garden. And he's right, they have to be watered a lot more often than you would if they were in the ground, but they put on a beautiful display.
I've seen pictures of those. They are very beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank our listeners for joining us today for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We'd love to hear your comments and feedback on today's show. Send us an email at grow@rosechat.info. You can find us on Twitter by following the Rose Chat hashtag. You can like Rose Chat Radio on Facebook. And be sure and check out our website, rosechatradio.com. For information on sponsorship opportunities and for more about our today's guests and our guests in the past and the present. You can subscribe to our podcast for free in the iTunes podcast store. Now, we believe that becoming a member of the American Rose Society is a decision that you won't regret. We invite you to check them out online at ars.org. Now, broadcast of Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the underwriting support of Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing an all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure teas and alfalfa teas for roses, available wholesale and retail at manuretea.com. Now, I'll tell you, if you're listening to this podcast in the weekend of July 27th, 2013, Haven Brand Soil Conditioners is running an incredible special that if you order a 9-pack of their soil conditioning teas, you'll get a 3-pack for free. So that's a little more moo-poo to brew.
And don't forget to like us and post on our Facebook page for a chance to win the prize pack this week. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
I'll tell you, it's a great show today. Jacques knows he grows.
I cannot wait.